Friends, hello, and welcome to Never Post, a podcast about and for the internet. I'm your host, Mike Rugnetta, and this upload is not a full episode. Illness has laid waste to the Never Post team and some of their families. Colds and flus and so on have put a number of us in rest and or caregiver mode, so the audio production is going to have to wait. We're a small team. We love making the show, but we got to take care of ourselves and our loved ones so we can keep making it over the long term. So we're going to push the release of episode 7 back a couple days. It is well underway. And once everyone is feeling 100%, we're going to have it uploaded for you. In the interim, we thought it would be fun to share an extended cut of one of our most popular segments, the one we refer to as the weight of email. This conversation begins with a very simple question. If you're writing an email that you deem important, whatever that means to you, do you feel like you can't send it from your phone? And whatever the answer is, why? Why do you feel that way? Me, Hans, Jason, and Georgia discuss at length. What follows is about 15 minutes longer than the segment cut that ended up in the public episode. If you enjoy this, most segments on the show have extended versions made available to members a week after an episode is published. You can head over to neverpo.st to see about becoming a member, to support us making the show, and to get access to extended segments and sideshows like Posts from the Field, our field recording podcast, Slow Post, where you can listen to my AI voice clone read you Wikipedia entries to help you fall asleep, and Never Watch, the watch-along podcast where we've just uploaded audio of the staff watching the Sandra Bullock masterpiece, The Net. It's a blast. It's a lot of fun. Members, if you happen to be listening on the public feed, do not worry. We're going to have something special for you as well while we sort out episode 7. But here, now, after a word from our current cross-promotional partners, the weight of emails.
I'm Bobby Finger.
And I'm Lindsay Weber.
Do you ever see a new face or name on your news feeds and say, who the heck is that?
Our podcast, Who Weekly, is everything you need to know about the celebrities you don't. Think of us as your cheat code to People Magazine, your glossary for Hollywood, a shortcut to understanding pop culture at large.
For the past 8 years, Who Weekly has been telling listeners everything they need to know about the celebrities they don't. The New Yorker says we spelunk deep into the demimonde with convivial delight. That's a direct quote.
Mostly, we're going to explain to you Irish star Barry Keoghan's sudden rise to fame and relationship with a not-so-under-the-radar pop princess named Sabrina.
The fake wedding Real Housewives star Cynthia Bailey had to promote a limo rental company.
And why all the Gen Zers you know are talking about a guy named Benson Boone.
Each episode goes deep into the biggest celebrity stories of the moment. And if you're still confused, we even have a weekly call-in episode where we answer the most burning celebrity queries.
Who Weekly airs twice weekly with brand new episodes on Tuesdays and Fridays. Listen and follow Who Weekly, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm here with Jason, Georgia, and Hans. Hello, friends.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm here. I'm awake. I'm thriving, and I'm learning.
I'm at least one of those things.
And I'm the other two.
So I have gathered you all here because I have a question for you, and I would like your opinion on various things. And there's a little bit of background to this. Recently, I wrote a big email to a client. This was like a big sort of important asking for things, spent a long time making sure that it was worded right, all this other stuff, and sent it. And then a few hours later, went out to dinner with Molly. And we're on the train going into Manhattan and my phone dings and it's a response to the email. And so I read it and they're like, yeah, this is great. Like all good, accepted, deadline, good, budget, good, whatever. And I was like, ah, yes, great. She said, write them back. Say to them, received, great. Can't wait to, whatever you would say in that reply email. And I said, oh, no, I can't do that. I'm only on my phone. And she said, ah, right, millennial. Molly is also a millennial, so
scathing.
The call is coming from inside the house.
You can only write an important email on the computer. And I want to know, just to get started, if this is a way that you all also feel. Because I was not aware this was a thing when Molly said it.
Huh.
Oh, I do all of my textual exchange on the computer. I prefer texting on the computer.
Oh.
Because I can type so much faster.
That is both practical and feels totally wild to me, the text
really?
Part.
Oh my God. Yeah. No, I've had like multiple conversations with people where I'm like, if I'm talking to them, for example, on Instagram, like on DMs on Instagram, I'll be like, just here's my number, text me. I prefer texting on a computer.
Okay.
I'm like the only person I know who does this.
Yeah, I mean, I want to hear from Jason and Hans.
That's it, guys. But, you can leave.
George, I got a lot of questions for you. One of them is, could you have a seat over here?
Okay, listen. It is a bigger screen. It is a bigger keyboard. You have everything there. You can see it all at the same time. It's just better. Like I'm right.
No, it is better. My litmus test is always, do I think I'm going to need tabs? Is there something I need to look at while writing this? And if the answer is remotely yes, then it's a computer for me. I can handle one page. If it is just tabbing over to one page on a browser and tabbing back to what I'm writing, I can do that on a phone, but that is the absolute limit. If more than one page or like a separate email and a web page need to be looked at to do this job, no shot, I'm doing it on the phone.
Interesting.
Mike, I have questions for you.
Okay, sure.
Is it you're worried your little fingers, your little thumbs can't go that fast? Are you worried you're going to autocorrect? Because autocorrect is a real thing on the phone that like can misinterpret you. Like that could be a reason. Is it okay, like the information is too important for the smallness of the device? Like what, where does that come from for you?
I think there are a couple things. And I want to stress that like I write emails on my phone all the time. But like there's a certain kind of email, a certain echelon of email that I'm like, I got to do this on a computer. And I think part of it is, for whatever reason, that echelon of email should not have the literal markers of being written on a phone. Like, you know, sent from mobile or mine is typed using only my thumbs. And there's no reason for that, I think, other than like my individual taste. Like I just prefer that if it is an important email, it shouldn't have those things on it. And I am not confident in myself in finding all of the settings, both within iOS and the Gmail app, to turn them all off. Mm-hmm. And also I don't want to, I'm just lazy, to like go turn them off, write the important email, turn them back on later, you know, cause I think there is some utility in knowing that the message that you've written came from a mobile device sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes I do think it's a mark of importance. Like I'm out in the world doing things and I'm emailing you back. That's how important this is. But that's like a different kind of importance, I think.
That's like the urgency, the importance of urgency.
Yes, exactly.
I also like, I think that email rules are silly for the most part. Like only include one exclamation mark. Make sure that you blah, blah, blah. You know, like all of these things of like to write a professional email, you must follow these very strict sort of like style ideas. I think most of them are bad. However, for whatever reason, I think a lot about how an email looks when you first open it.
To the other person. Yeah.
To the other person.
So I'm getting it from Mike. Mike sent me something. Whoop. Yeah. What do I see? Yeah.
And the feeling that I want someone to have is, I'm going to read this email. Not, oh my God. And so that for me, the facets of that are like overall email length, length of section between new line breaks, and length of sentences. And I just visually feel like I have a harder time getting a grasp on how an email feels overall on a smaller screen.
Because you can only fit so many words into that, and you have to scroll up and scroll down and remember, yeah. And you can't get the full scope of it by looking.
And I think part of it also is a little bit of anxiety of being like, on the small screen, it always feels too long to me because of how much I'm scrolling and going back and forth. And I just, you know, I don't know, maybe it's my brain. Maybe it's just like I wrote a billion emails before iPhones even existed. And so it's just my anchor point is different. Yeah.
It's like a sense memory of that email.
Yeah.
Because I identify with that so much. You've articulated something that I was feeling, but had not actually thought about, is that like, the construction, the physical construction of an email and the proportions of it are something that I understand on a computer screen and are important to me to figure out if this email is successful in some way that's hard to articulate. And scrolling up and down on a phone to try to figure that out is terrifying, and I'm not confident that I can do it.
It's an aesthetic choice much as a formal choice?
I think so.
It feels so tied to the concept of a successful email to me. I just know it will work if it feels proportionally correct.
I have another clarifying question. Because you're using the word important, but I want us to define important a little bit more.
Sure, sure.
Because I feel like we're conflating a little bit what might be a Venn diagram of important and formal.
Oh.
Interesting.
Hmm.
So one of my jobs is I do what is effectively like artists' services for a music technology company, or like I'm reaching out to artists and I'm often like commissioning work from them. And those emails are not formal, mm-hmm. but they are important, mm-hmm. and I would never send one on my phone.
Mm.
Okay. Interesting. What are the markers of them that make you say they're not formal?
I think they're conversational. Like it's talking about people's work. It's talking about collaborating. It's, you know, figuring out the ins and outs of working together with someone and, you know, making things and sometimes providing like tech support and stuff like that. But it is still discussing work that someone has to do, deadlines, the details are important, and I got to make sure I get them right. You know what I mean?
That feels like a big one that is hard to do on a phone.
I got to make sure everything's communicated very clearly because like I'm the representative of this company. Like, yeah.
And that sounds like you're going to need some tabs to make extra sure you can get those things
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
About those tabs though.
Yeah.
I mean, this to me is also a word that I'm thinking about this is like a degree of respect and professionalism. I mean, I don't know if that's
dangerous.
Ooh, I know.
Boy. Keep going, Georgia. Break it down for us.
Never mind. I don't want to talk about it anymore.
No. I want, keep going.
But I'm thinking also of like the notion of professionalism in regards to this aesthetic design question here. I'm still very hung up on a part of this that has also pinged a discomfort I've been feeling and haven't really been able to identify the source of, which is the copy, the design, these elements of little filigree that's added to your digital communication only on your phone. So like what, Mike, you were saying of like, sent from my iPhone or whatever, like that just, I don't have to think about that if I'm on a computer. And there's so many little versions of that. Even, I mean, God, Hans, the evocation of autocorrect. I'm sweating. I'm nervous. Yeah. I'm scared.
I don't always notice it. And then I don't get it until later. And I'm like, oh. Or like proper nouns that I intended. I'm working on a story for another show where it's all about blobfish. And autocorrect is always putting it to blowfish. It's a small change, but that's not the word I mean.
That's a different thing.
It's a different thing. Fish. And I don't always notice when it does it.
Yeah.
Can we sidebar for a moment and just acknowledge to one another? I feel like I think I need this sanity check. iPhone specifically, autocorrect, has steadily gotten worse and worse and worse over the last decade to the point where now I feel like I'm fighting my phone to type what I want to say.
Yes.
Worse in what way? What are you seeing that's worse? Is it autocorrecting more things or the things it corrects, it gets more wrong?
So,
or both?
So I got so frustrated about a year ago. I turned autocorrect completely off.
Oh.
It's just off. And I just do, sometimes I keep up the word suggestions and I use swipe to type.
Oh,
so I'm drawing lines.
Whoa.
And
I never got good at that.
Me
and
either.
What it thinks I am trying to say when at least I think I am typing something extremely obvious is often maddening. I should keep track of them because none of them are coming right to mind, but it's I think very easily summarized by a problem that was prevalent maybe like 2 years ago, which was the ABD problem, which is that so many people had, from what I understand, and listeners will correct me if I have misunderstood this story, but my understanding was that so many people had accidentally typed ABD instead of AND that the autocorrect brain started to think that was a word.
Oh.
And so it would autocorrect AND to ABD.
Oh my God.
And that in iOS 17, they've actually built in a number of things on the back end to address these kinds of problems because they did not previously exist. Because the autocorrect just learns from what everybody's typing. Okay. So, okay. I'm not insane though.
No, I don't think you're insane.
It's worse. Okay.
A thing that I have noticed is that the autocorrect will not catch or be confused by a near misspelling in such a way that makes me completely forget how to spell the word I was going for. Because it won't make the small change to get it to where it was, which makes me then rethink everything I thought I knew about that word and have to go to Google to type in the worst version of that word to get to what it actually is spelled like to put that in.
You're like typing conceit with a G for some reason. You're
conceit, good
dude. Dude, conceit was literally the word in my head. That's uncanny.
I'm in there.
But it's one of the things, like, you know, you flip the E in the I or something and you hope it corrects it, but instead it sends you to a different, it sends you to like concept.
Yeah.
And they're like, no. And then you do it again or whatever. And then you're like, wait, is that the right order? And then I'm like, oh, does conceit have an S in the middle? And you start to just like completely get thrown off the fucking planet.
C-O-N-S-S-E-P-P-T.
Yeah.
Language Log years ago coined the Cupertino effect for words that would get switched to the incorrect word by autocorrect.
Amazing.
And then would like go to publish. So you would be reading things where, you know, it should have been conceit, but it was concept. There should be another phrase for, or another coinage for the increasing self-doubt that you can speak and type your own language because Apple is like, no, you mean this.
Yeah.
Concept. Conceptual.
Conceit? Never heard of it.
I don't know what that word even means.
So, okay, I want to get us back to emails, and I want to ask a relatively big question, which is informed by some research that I did before us starting this roundtable. I was reading last night about just like generational email norms. So it's like baby boomers include GIFs or like images and like have quotes in their email signatures. Gen X doesn't capitalize anything. There's no punctuation. Their emails are very short. Gen Z just doesn't send emails.
I mean,
void.
And one thing I learned about millennials is that this preference to send emails on a larger device is the majority preference for our cohort. Something like 60% of millennials prefer to send email on a computer. In a similar thing, I read basically this claim that was millennials think more about emails than any of these other generations. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's so stereotypical, but like, this was the way it was framed. Something we are anxious about. Oh. Do you think that's true?
Absolutely.
Okay. What? Go on.
It is just as much as other forms of like the social internet are the marker and lifestyle of people who grew up with its nascence. We grew up with the nascence of email. Email was the new thing. I'm guessing that most people of our generation, I am 41, and an email address was my first internet experience. And that primacy of it was validated by its use in business for 20 years, 30 years. It's still, when you work for corporations or communicate in formalized ways, it's still the preferred way of communicating. I think that it's got a reification that happens. Plus, we grew up alongside it. And so it's a peer.
See, this is where, tragically, I think I differ from you guys a little bit.
Georgia, you are a millennial, right? I don't know where the cutoff is.
I am. Okay. I think the cutoff is 1997.
Okay.
I was born in 1993.
Okay.
But that being said, I am definitely closer. Like, I am a millennial. I'm not going to pretend I'm not. But there are components of my upbringing and my relationship, especially to the internet, that I do find myself aligning a little bit more with Gen Z, not completely. But I mean, Hans, I think you're right. I was also thinking about this of like, well, email was sort of in its infancy, nascency, like going through that first era of its existence in a way that was very essential for us. But my relationship with email is not nearly as close. Like, my memory of the first sort of online communication handle, address, whatever that I had was like my AIM username.
Yeah.
And yeah. I certainly, like, I obviously send a lot of emails. Don't mean to brag, but sorry, guys.
I sent a couple emails in my day.
This girl, oh, she's sending emails. But I am definitely of the camp of like, why don't you just text me? The equivalent to me of like this meeting could be an email is this email could be a text. And I run into this, frankly, more in my personal life because my parents, who are boomers, always email me as like kind of texting me to be like, Georgia, are you coming home for your friend's baby shower? Ellipses.
Like a one line email.
Yes. Yes.
Minion meme.
Yeah. Minion meme. Yeah. Like they are much more connected to email as like, if I'm going to communicate with my daughter, this is the first way I'm going to do it. Email to me, if we really bring it back to this notion of formality or importance, if you're emailing me, I'm kind of assuming that this has some kind of professional tone to it, if that makes sense. Like, I hardly know any of my friends' email addresses because I don't need to email them about anything.
Yeah, I agree.
I think that's true. Yeah.
So I have a question. The best kind of question just starts with me talking about myself.
It's more of a comment. It's more of an anecdote, really.
In thinking about correspondences that were primarily email, of which there are none in my life right now, but there used to be when I was younger, a fair amount of folks, the primary method of communication we had was email. And they were correspondences. They were long form. They were considered. They went back and forth every week to month to, if we were in a fever pitch, maybe, you know, once a day or something. But they were thought out. They were basically electronic letters. I don't use email like that anymore. One can speculate a variety of reasons, both technological and personal and aging or whatever. But that behavior has not ported over to any other platform. And I wonder if it has for others. Does anyone do long form correspondence on text or on any of these other places?
there is a way that texting for me now resembles, if not in scope, then in content, talking on the phone when I was like 13, which is like there are a number of people where I would consider them friends, but like for the most part, we only ever communicate via text message. We have long, ongoing back and forth via text. None of it's long form. Like we're not writing letters to one another, but it's like, you know, texting multiple times a week just about like what sort of stuff is going on in our lives and like funny jokes and things that we see on the internet that make us think of each other. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I get like, hey, wow, how you doing? Here's what I'm up to. What are you up to? Messages on LinkedIn.
I was going, I thought that was coming.
All roads lead.
And that, I respond to those, but it's always like, hey, good, working in media, got a kid, nice to see you, bye. Because, like, I don't, you know. Yeah. I have, what you say rings true to me, Jason, that, like, there were times, probably, like, 15 years ago, where I would, like, have back and forth with someone who I knew via email. And, yeah, you would write, like, maybe a page.
Yeah.
That sort of went away and hasn't really come up anywhere else.
The closest thing I can think of that I certainly use, my friends certainly use, is sending voice memos. Because my friends and I, it's definitely dependent on the situation. But I have friends who, when we're texting, sometimes we'll just switch over to voice memo and send each other voice memos instead. Or if we're sharing something and we're walking or we're sharing something that's an especially long story, what we'll do instead of texting it out is send a like 8 minute long voice memo.
Whoa.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's just a podcast.
Listen, yeah, it kind of is. I'm like, oh, just gotta pop my headphones on. But yeah, I mean, in terms of this long form component to it, that's the closest approximation I have in my life.
Probably about 5+ years ago, Mike, your wife Molly took a text conversation to voice memo midway through the conversation, and I texted her back, "I'm not doing this."
Oh, funny! She did the same first... to me, and I was like, "Great."
Molly is a famous user of voice messages. Yeah,
it's the first and last time anyone tried.
Oh my God. You said no.
Speak to the phone.
On my Saturday?
In front of my salad?
I speak into microphone for work and it is weekend.
I have a side question that we haven't really talked about from Mike's original question.
Yep.
We've talked a lot about the technology and the ways that the technology affects what you do, which of course reminds me of Walter Murch in the Blink of an Eye. Amazing book, and in this he has an essay, Methods and Machines. Walter Murch, famously the inventor of sound design, and one of the most incredible film sound designers and sound designers to have ever lived, and a great theorist about science, sound. And in this essay, Methods and Machines, from his book In the Blink of an Eye, he talks about how much the machine changes what you do. The first line of the essay is, "The tools that you choose to edit with can have a determining effect on the final product," meaning that he uses different editing machines to have different choices, to do different things, to have different results, depending on what he needs out of the film, which I think ties what we're saying and what we've been talking about. But there's a whole other component that I'm really curious about, because you started that story on the train. And is there anything about not the technology that you're using, but the location on which you find yourself that feels like it's too casual, that there's something about the formality of sitting in front of a designated spot, which is what a computer usually is, or a few spots to do this? Is there an environmental thing? Like, would you ever send an urgent email on the toilet?
Not to keep bringing up Molly, but I guess she was like the genesis of this whole discussion in a way. Molly makes fun of me sometimes because she will ask me a question and my response will be, I'm not ready to think about that yet.
Boundaries.
She'll like want to make plans. She'll be like, what should we have for dinner tonight? And it'll be like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And I'll be like, I can't put my brain there yet. Like, I'm not there yet.
Yeah.
And it's
yeah.
too much work to get there.
Yep. Yeah.
And I think that I do feel that to a certain degree, when I am working, I am like, I'm in the studio, I'm in front of the computer, brain is in a certain mode,
yeah.
and certain other things become more facile. Facile? Is that the right word? Certain things become easier.
Yeah.
Don't ask autocorrect.
Yeah. Because yeah, there's an A in there.
Did you mean duck?
Always.
Always.
Certain things become easier just because of, one, the attitude that I'm able to inhabit in a particular place, and also because, like, it's very material. Like, all the stuff is in the right place. Like like Georgia said, the keyboard is easier to type on. The mouse is always in the same spot. Everything's big on the screen. The studio monitors are here so I can listen to loud music and blot out everything else that's distracting me. I think that, it's harder to get into that same frame of mind on the train on the way to date night, where I'm like, oh, gotta change gears. And it really does feel like doing a steady 180 on the highway.
Yeah.
However, to answer your question directly, would I send an important or urgent email from the toilet? Is the question on a phone specifically or on any device?
I mean, I'm hoping the phone is maybe the most you're taking to the toilet with you, but I'm not going to judge.
I mean, I've never sent an important email from the toilet on a laptop, but it doesn't seem insane to me.
Just bring a tower in there. Just get a whole set of... Please, honey, I'm gaming.
I have some important business to attend to. Yes.
Sending emails from my Oculus, honey.
I have kind of the same reaction that you do, Mike, but maybe for different reasons. I think I have a defense. Like, I want it to be on the computer because the computer is where I do business.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I feel like I don't want an email. I don't want to. Not only is it hard to put my brain into that space on the way to date night, I don't want that in my brain on the way to date night. I want to be on date night.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel similarly about being on the toilet. I don't want to also have to do my job.
Yes.
Yeah.
I can only think of very situation specific moments in which that would happen. And it would truly have to be like, I need to send this out.
Yeah.
Let's say I'm at a party. I don't want to do this, but if I'm in the bathroom, at least I'm kind of in a little room by myself and can be left alone to be like, oh God, okay.
So great to hear from you.
That sounds great. I will have that to you by EOD. All my best. And then delete, sent from my iPhone, delete all traces. but truly, the only time I could think of doing that would be under duress. Otherwise, I would just wait and respond to something later.
Okay, so I feel like we've learned a lot about each other's email preferences. I want to return to something that we talked about at the top of this conversation, which is Georgia typing texts on her computer.
I knew it. I knew you were going to come for me. I knew it. I can't believe this.
One, what's wrong with you? Two,
you're going to... Oh, my God. I
think this is interesting because, like... I think a lot about the weight of posts. Like, a text to me is a relatively light post. An email is a relatively, for the most part, usually, a relatively heavy, quote unquote, post. A tweet is like somewhere between those two. A blog post is like closer to an email and sometimes heavier than an email, depending upon what it is. And I just think that typing texts on a keyboard like elevates them in weight in a way that I think is very interesting.
All right.
So here's the question then. I'm assuming that your texts, all of you, come to your computers and your phones at the same time.
Yes.
Yeah.
When you are sitting there at your desk and a text comes in.
Yeah.
What percentage of the time do you answer on your desktop or pick up your phone to answer it?
This is a good question.
You already know my answer to that question.
The phone is left in the bedroom. It has not made its way to the desk.
The only exception to that, I mean, there are definitely exceptions to that. I'm not like carrying my computer to like the CTA being like, oh, gotta respond to some text. But for example, if I need to send a photo of something for my camera roll, if I need to edit a text, I can't do that on my computer. For some reason, the software like hasn't updated to be able to do that on the computer. So if I sent something and, God, this is such a dumb editorial thing, if there's a double space there and it drives me crazy, all right, Mike.
you are proving my hypothesis here that you think of texts as being weightier than the rest of us.
Listen, grammar and syntax are important to me and I won't apologize for that. But yeah, like if it is easier to do it on a phone, or if I need to have access to things that are in my phone, I will absolutely send it on my phone.
I think I feel the same way. The iMessage app on desktop is so miserable that if I need to do anything other than just send a text, like respond to someone, write text, then I'm going to go get my phone.
Yeah.
But like, I do agree with you. Like, I hate Apple autocorrect. Typing on the iPhone is also miserable.
Yeah.
So I'm right.
Yeah.
It's better.
So I'm right. So you agree.
If you need this, then
please.
Yes. Okay, friends, thank you for letting me gather you to ask you about your email practices and preferences.
My pleasure.
I don't know if it was my pleasure.
I don't know. Yeah, have we done ourselves a disservice by being millennials and then just sitting here now staring into the abyss of thinking about email? Thanks for listening. If you have thoughts about emails, please call us at 651-615-5007. Email us at theneverpost@gmail.com. Leave us a voice memo via Airtable, link in the show notes, or write us a comment on the website at neverpo.st. We will be back in the main feed as soon as possible with the next episode, which is our first fully themed episode, which kind of happened by mistake, to be honest, but we just sort of ran with it and it's turning out to be really fun. Never Post's producers are Audrey Evans, Georgia Hampton, and the mysterious Dr. First Name Last Name. Our senior producer is Hans Buto. Our executive producer is Jason Oberholzer. And the show's host is me. I'm Mike Rignetta. It's easier to read the mind of a fox than to guess what a man's about to say when he returns from the woods. Head full of roots, veins more like branches, shoes in one hand, feet blistered. And none of this necessarily an indication of how the feet feel, what miles uphill and back have done to the soles and to the small bones that propel a man. Excerpt of Rest Before You Sleep by Dionisio D. Martinez. Never Post is a production of Charts and Leisure.